back. I took last week off. Call it the closest thing to PTO that I can get to these days. Thank you, Heather. Thank you, Roman. I took my daughter for a quick weekend getaway to Dublin and a side trip, some side trips to Southern Ireland. It was a much needed break that I needed. And I was just telling the folks here, Joe, John, and Joanne, I was like, we saw three castles, several museums, a few pubs, and many pints of Guinness. So it was all good. Time zone, you know, would have made it a little bit challenging to have a coffee hour last week. And I just wasn't sure what the Wi-Fi was going to work or not work in our hotel. Turned out it was working just fine. But I just said, you know what, we will take a break, come back. And I'm excited to see you all here for this talk today on AI era transformation, the future of work with AI agents. And I'll give you sort of my entry, just a few seconds, just waiting for some more folks to join. We got a pretty good sign up for this one. Usually the AI ones do. And I will just say that we may end up doubling up going into the end of the year with more AI topics. There's just, you know, just a ton of interest about what people are learning, what people are trying and doing. And, you know, I've had the fortune of being able to go to several conferences over the last 6 months to do some writing on it. I have some research coming up on AI as well. And so, you know, like everything that we try to do here at the Coffee Hour, just share what we know, leave you some references on where to get some more information, and just get you pragmatically excited about our future. I think Joanne may have some better words for that, because there's some realities, there's some hype and everything that we're seeing come out. And, you know, AI agents is one of those. Before we get started, I just want to give a shout out. I told you this quarter, we're going to have a quarter of announcements, and I'll say this again during the break, but earlier this week, I relaunched my blog, something that I've been wanting to do for several years. And the blog's been out since 2005. I have almost 700 posts on it. It's the number one rated CIO blog on Feedpost. It's a top 20 blog, I think, for Agile, and a top 50 blog for DevOps. And it was running on Blogger on an outdated design with an information architecture that was long overdue of a recast, and with a ton of help from my son, Ronan, who is here listening. And a lot of help from several Gen AI tools. We were able to complete the migration. I think we started around August. And, you know, like every other migration, we got 80% of the way there in a few weeks. And the last 20% were just a lot of sweat labor, a lot harder than I expected. So I'm actually writing a blog post for Monday that will cover more technical details: which Gen AI tools we used, how did we use them, what were their limitations. Even if you're not blogging or thinking of doing a site redesign, I really get into some hands-on details about some of the things we encountered and some of the ways we used Gen AI tools as part of our migration. So look out for that. We did not use AI agents. We're going to talk more about this today, but let me introduce the topic this way. I think the first time I heard about AI agents was from a colleague that I went to grad school with. He is at the forefront of AI work. He always was. He was the first person I met in my neural networks class in the 90s. And he said, imagine this, Isaac. Imagine you are working on an Agile team, only that every single role on the Agile team, whether it's a product owner, a scrum master, a program manager, a technical lead, has an agent to work with. And that agent is is essentially programmed and trained on the experiences and the expertise of that particular role and is acting as that role's advisor in the implementation. You know, so a product owner can ask for help around writing requirements. A scrum master can get some automation done in terms of getting some scrum reports filled out and so forth. And think about every single role, not necessarily being replaced, but being augmented and at least simplified by the work of an agent that is specially trained on the expertise for that role. And I thought I was pretty far-fetched. This was back in May. Over May and June, I went to see Appian, Pega, SAP, and then most recently this quarter, Workday, and then yesterday at Cloudera. All five of these platforms have agents built into them. And they're doing things that you would expect people who work in these platforms to do, just getting an AI to be an assistant working with them. So imagine in Workday, you are a talent acquisition specialist, and now you have an AI agent that's helping you navigate candidates, that's helping you review resumes that are posted, that's helping you navigate the feedback around people who have done the interviewing, who's creating summarizations for you and creating job descriptions for you as an agent in working in that space. Imagine, working in the IT service management space. And I saw this, I've seen demos of this from both ServiceNow and Atlassian, where a service agent is now getting assistance in terms of how to respond to a request or how to resolve an issue, or even just how to communicate back to an end user around the problem that they are escalating to them. So AI agents, think of it as a potentially a layer above what you're using an LLM for. Think of LLMs as a natural language extension, and think of agents as a function that you're using it for. And so you're starting to see not only a lot of the large SaaS providers provide functionality that are specific for different roles, but a lot of interesting application development capabilities for when teams take their proprietary data, take their LLMs that they've enhanced with their content and context using RAGs, which is a way to plug in content into a large language model, in some cases taking large language models and augmenting it with small language models, and then going beyond that and saying, okay, now we're going to actually build a capability around here. Yesterday I met somebody who was in the healthcare space, building agents in for nurses to be able to and for doctors to inquire about procedures and how to change policies or think about policy changes based on the data that hospital is working with. So just fascinating new ways. I think it's very early on. I don't think we're seeing, let's just say, Star Trek-like agent capabilities coming out just yet. And it's unclear how close to that sort of science fiction personified assistant that we're going to see come out of this technology in the near future. But you're going to see the future of work really change as these agents are now popping up in mainstream tools and companies are investing in them. It's going to really change how we're thinking about working and what types of things people are doing and what types of things people are responding on agents with. So I'm going to pause here. That's my intro, a little longer this week. Let me hand the floor over to Joanne first. Joanne, I know you were really excited about this topic. I just saw some data, and I'll give that update at the second half, just on how much the industrials are looking forward to using AI agents. So I'd love your perspective on this. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning. And before I forget, happy Thanksgiving to all my Canadian counterparts. It's our big tea day this weekend. Yay. Nice to have a day off on Monday. That being said, yes, industrials, manufacturing, chemicals, oil and gas, all of those industries are looking very lovingly at AI agents. They have to kind of figure out how to do AI before they can do agents. But I'm involved with a few companies that are working on what are called autonomous intelligent agents. And this is the next level to what you were just describing. And really what differentiates them is that they can sense and detect. In other words, they're capable of complex decision making in real time. They can adapt to changing conditions because they can perceive their environment, make those decisions, and take actions to execute specific goals. Now, that may sound very far-fetched, but I'd like to break that down for you, if I may, just for a moment. If you think about an agent or machine learning, the environment can be taught through machine learning. It's a factory space. It has an ambient temperature of X on a daily basis. It has a noise level of Y. And in other words, you can break down all the different variables and train the agent to understand, because it's just machine learning, that it can learn what that environment looks like. It can understand to a degree that the temperature has changed, that there's more humidity in the air, and that that may have an impact to certain types of equipment, and that the decisions that it's going to make could be sending an alert or an alarm to someone. It could be notifying a worker on the shop floor. It could be doing something like, hey, the raw materials that were just put into this line, because I've learned this by being trained on it through reinforcement learning and machine learning and large language models, is not quite what you expect it to be. So in other words, it's not as far-fetched as it sounds, because the data is readily available. It's how you write the algorithms and how you use the machine learning. So from that perspective, that's the intelligence part. And then, of course, one could talk about the anatomy of the agent, which is the different layers of capabilities and how they're structured. They're sensors. It becomes the eyes and the ears of the agent. Well, if it's collecting data from an environment, providing raw input like the temperature is something that the agent will understand and it will then respond to. So a sensor might detect the temperature. A thermostat is a sensor. And then the model has been trained to learn temperature, pressure, composition of the air quality, all sorts of different variables. So there's a bunch of layers that are stacked on top of each other. First, it's the data layer. Then there's the perception layer that transforms it into meaningful information. And then finally, there's a layer where the agent's learned abilities are stored and applied. So there's a lot of corporations, large and small, working on autonomous intelligent agents, and you're going to see a lot of them come to fruition over the next year. Don't be worried about them. They're doing a specific thing in a specific sort of controlled environment. Making them completely autonomous, think about that a year from now. And that's basically just flipping a switch and saying, the agent has authority, if you will, to go and execute Y command. Sorry, Isaac.
It's great. Joanne, somewhere in here, there's a diagram I think we're going to commission you to create. An industrial 5.0 diagram that has human, it has sensor, it has robotic, it has machine learning, it has digital twin, and it now has agent in there, and how and how they are working in concert together to actually achieve a result. I mean, there's a lot of stuff here we're talking about, right?
There is, but you know, if you a lot of people are familiar with certain forms of robotics, like Spot the Dog, right? That we may have all seen, which is an amazing device in and of itself, and I'm thoroughly enamored. I'd love to be able to sit and pet one, but that's beside the point. The idea is that It is sensing and detecting its environment as it's walking around a factory. The same holds true with humanoid robotics. You've seen pictures of them coming from Tesla and from many other companies. These are basically intelligent autonomous agents because they're walking around, they're doing a thing, they're sensing their environment, and they do work in concert with human beings. And if you think about it, if I put a sensor on the wall to detect the temperature, but I have a robot sitting next to me that can do the same thing, why do I have to double down? I can let the robot do it, collect all the data I need, and mine the robot's data to be agentic and save myself a lot of grief. Companies have to start thinking about mixing different types of technologies to get better results.
Yeah, hence my request for a diagram.
I will make this so, number one.
Hi, John. John, you always bring a hands-on technical angle around the discussions we're having. I'm just kind of interested in what your experience, if any, with agents.
Yeah. I have a friend that's building one. He works for kind of like a startup accelerator, but they also have an investment group too. And the one he has helps them develop code. He integrates it with Slack and with GitHub. And he's able to communicate with it through Slack, and it performs all sorts of interactions through Git. And I think that's like the future of a lot of this stuff, which is whatever you're doing, they'll plug this stuff into your work tools. So you just use your normal work tools like you would use with your coworkers, and these things will just basically almost be like another coworker that you'd be working with. The other place I'm really using them, seeing them being used by large companies, is any place that they would have offshore support teams. And so, like, I was trying to log a ticket with one of the really large cloud companies last week, and it was almost like I had to defeat their virtual agent before I could log a ticket. And it was like trying to make me go through all the troubleshooting steps. But the funniest thing is that you could tell that it was like misinterpreting some of the troubleshooting steps and some of the things. Like, you could see that they're still dialing in. And so then I was like arguing with the thing that, like, hey, you know, please read that again, because you're like, if you'd really follow the instructions on that page, you'd see that you're giving me bad advice. And finally, it let me log a ticket, which allowed me to get into the support team. But I saw it with that. I actually also saw it with my insurance company. We had this very comical incident where my very happy kid just flung the door open into this very nice truck. And so we actually had a collision claim from a very small porting. And it was the same, trying to get through that insurance company's virtual agent so I could really talk to a real agent to get that settled. And I'm like, come on, you guys, it's like a video game battling this thing.
John, I think that's where our delusion might come in. I mean, there was such hype around chatbot, and chatbot is rules generated. So if you ask it the thing it knows how to do in the way it's expecting you to write your query, it will give you a reasonable answer. But, you know, that was the fall down with chatbot. And now, you know, the one main difference with an agent, of course, is it's, it's using language model. It's usually confined to a subject area to improve its accuracy. But it still has access to its corpus of knowledge, and it needs to make good judgment calls. And I just give you my example in the technical weeds. I was using AWS this week, and AWS has a service called Q, which is essentially an agent to help developers. And as soon as I started seeing errors, Q popped up to help me work through those errors. And it took about five different trials before it actually led me to the right solution. But it did. And it was not something that was going to be easy or trivial to figure out. And you'll see that in the blog post I do on Monday about all these details. I'm going to go to John, and then we'll go to Liz, and then we have Rob and Ritesh joining us today. Hey Joe, welcome to the floor. Have you run into agents yet?
Yeah, oddly enough, I was thinking about the difference between queries, which, you know, became increasingly intelligent and complex, and AI agents. And I think, you know, to your idea of this diagram, there are a series of tasks. Let's say you're trying to fulfill an order for a customer. You know where the customer is, you know where they take delivery, you know what their time frame is. You know what your warehouse has, because you can do a simple query there. But maybe you have other warehouses. Maybe there's some production schedule and the goods are going to come off in a day or two. An intelligent agent can actually be your proxy and bake all this information together on the base on a base of knowledge. What does your customer need? Where are they? Where is the material? And it can either decide that it can meet the customer's requirement, or that this has to be back ordered, or perhaps there's a substitute that could be baked in. And so I'm picturing this diagram, Isaac, in my head, where there's a series of steps that you go through. And some of those steps used to be executed by a human using an electronic tool, a query or a phone call. And now that line is shifting. So those tasks are just being done by the agent collectively to give an intelligent result.
Yeah, Joe, that use case was very similar to one I saw at the PEGA conference, where they're using agents mm-hmm. in supply chain when there's supply chain disruptions, and you know, the employee there can throw through a lot of what if scenarios and narrow down the options very quickly by looking at you know, asking the right questions and having that dialogue with the agent around that. You know, and then you're just seeing a lot of that. Another one I think I saw at SAP, you know, think of the employee who is not, maybe does a travel request and expense once a year. And every year the requirements change and the forms change and the UI changes, and they just need to do, you know, book a trip and get expenses paid. And now there's an agent there helping them on both sides to help book that trip and also complete their expense forms around it. So, you know, these are at the heart are simple things in some cases, but they can be enormously helpful when you're doing something that's out of the ordinary for your job. And now you have an agent to help you and assist you in that work. Hi, Liz. Yeah. I hope you're in a quiet spot to join us.
I think I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
You can?
We can hear you. We can. Okay. You have a little bit of noise coming in.
Okay. I'll try to be brief. Sure. So, I mean, at the risk of being redundant or oversimplifying, I think that what's interesting about this is that if you can make the problem small enough and provide enough context, that's when AI becomes extremely powerful. I was at a conference this weekend, or this week, where we were talking about a specific type of personality test called, I don't know, Aptiv or something. And it was, he was demonstrating, you know, it's sort of like ENFP or Myers-Briggs. I'm sure we're all familiar with our particular version of whatever. But taking those tests and providing it enough information and enough of the results to feed into an AI model that allows you then to then screen for matching up with specific job titles, so you can say, this is the kind of person I'm looking for, then screen for that kind of person. Then when you get those screenings for those people, you can then say, okay, well, maybe they're not exactly 100% match, but I can then use the AI model to generate questions to probe on how they compensate for those pieces that I think I'm missing. So the agent becomes like an additional arm, like literally an extra right arm for you. So just throwing that out, it was really, really interesting. And also, by the way, I don't know if you heard that the Nobel Prize in Physics was awarded a couple of days ago to the pioneers for AI, which really has nothing to do with physics, but whatever.
Well, neural networks, physics, engineering, I think.
It all goes together.
It all goes together, and I actually applaud the committee for recognizing, you know, the work. I studied that work back when I was in grad school, and it was pretty revolutionary at the time. You know, Liz, what I think about here when we get into sort of planning the future work, you think back to, you know, all the Six Sigma work we ran as we started just automating, and recognizing that at some point we're going to have to completely re-engineer a process, that there's so much change in how we're going from beginning to end that we need to start from scratch and rethink what people are doing and what machines are doing at this point. Joanne's giving me a thumbs up. I think
exactly.
Agents is going to be another spark in that, and saying, okay, if people are using agents for coding and using agents for testing and using, you know, what does, you know, where do we
exactly
need people doing things differently? So,
we'll cover that. Speaker who spoke about, like, take your job today, identify which things you think in the future will be replaced by AI, start replacing those things with someone else immediately, and start doubling down on the stuff that you know needs you.
I think we needed to do that in our very busy lives for a long time. Hi, Rob. It's good to see you. Thanks for raising your hand to speak. There's a mute button on the bottom right-hand side of your panel, which is the only way you can speak on this event. We'll give you a couple seconds to find it. And if you do want to speak, just come off mute and we'll get you to chime in with your thoughts on AI agents. Ritesh, welcome back. Same direction, find the mute button on the bottom. There you go, Ritesh.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be back here. Thank you if you can hear me. Yeah. Isaac, you mentioned about SAP. Interestingly, this week it was their annual TechEd event. And and looking at where we are heading with this entire conversation, I'll tell you what SAP did this week. So they drive 87% of the global commerce. Yeah. And they came up with two very interesting use cases for us, for all the participants. So the first one was a dispute management use case that employs autonomous AI agents. And these agents are capable of analyzing and resolving dispute resolutions. Like they can work with incorrect and missing invoices, unapplied credits, duplicate payments. And then there's this another use case that would talk about employing autonomous AI agents. Yeah, for automating bill payments, invoice processing. So I believe there's lot to happen, you know, like as we are talking about it, and I see most of your posts coming out like from 2 or 3 years now on AI. We have come a long way, and there's still a lot to discover. That's what I would like to bring from SAP over here.
Yeah, you know, I saw Ray Wong speak yesterday, and if you've never seen him speak, he's pretty amazing. I mean, he just goes through 70 slides in 7 minutes and makes you really, really smart that quickly. But, you know, the last year we were talking about LLMs and RAGs, and he's predicting that we've got about 12 to 18 months of discussion around AI agents, and you know, there's going to go through its own hype curve around it. I think we're seeing the early stages of the hype because literally every enterprise platform is talking about the 3 to 6 agents that they're launching, and they all look very promising. They're doing things that people are actually doing, in some cases that are hard to do well. Where having a right hand or an extra right hand, as Liz put it, is often very useful, and where the expertise is often welcome. You know, I think the way they're being introduced in the user experience is being done in such a way that I think people are embracing it. And I think these software companies are smart in how they're doing this to avoid that fear factor of it making it even appear like it's going to replace somebody. Joe, I'm going to give you a chance to comment on that in a second, but I do want to take my break. And I do want to read off some data for everybody before we come back. But Folks, if this is your first time or one of your first times joining us, this is our 98th episode of the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. We speak about different topics that digital transformation leaders are interested in: leadership, practices, technologies, capabilities. Today, one of our key themes, AI era transformation. We're trying to be real and pragmatic understanding the hype and the risks, but the also most importantly, the opportunities around AI. And I think AI agents, quite frankly, are early. I think they're a little bit overpromised right now, but they have a lot of capability that's going to become very interesting over the next few years, particularly since every company building them is collecting all the data to make them smarter. So that's why we have this conversation, and I'm sure we will revisit this going into the future. Our episode next week is really one that I'm very excited about and very fearful about. It's about accelerating transformation, pivoting with financial uncertainties. And there's a lot of reasons for us to like sort of guess what 2025 and 2026 is going to bring between political uncertainties, financial uncertainties, wars going on, climate issues and storms affecting things. And if you're a digital trailblazer trying to figure out what areas to work on and prioritize for your business, it is really difficult today to do beyond the basics. So we're going to talk about it on the 18th. And on the 25th, we're going to go a little bit nuts and bolts. We'll talk about agile innovation, evolving agile DevOps, and the software development lifecycle with Gen AI. We're going to talk about the future of building applications and building workflow and experiences now that Gen AI is being baked into everything. So I'm really excited about that particular topic. Folks who were here at the beginning heard this. I relaunched my blog this week. blogs.starcio.com has been around since 2005. I have almost 700 posts on it. I've been working with my son and intern over the last few months to do something that has been most needed for several years. It's taken a lot of thinking effort. Some contributions from my team here, from Joanne, John, Joe, and Liz, several others, Jeanette and several others, Heather, who have been giving me advice, in some cases testing things, giving me feedback on the brand. I got a ton of help from Gen AI that I'll be writing about in Monday's post. And the blog is now live under the new domain, drive.starcio.com. And what are we driving? We're driving agility, innovation, and transformation. I picked those three areas to focus on. If you read this week's post, I give some rationale behind that. So please do visit the blog. It has a updated information architecture. So if you're a data officer, a digital officer, a program manager, product manager, if you're interested in IoT or AI ops, it's all there for you to find. Content that I've been writing about for the last almost 20 years. So thank you for all of that. And, you know, please provide feedback. It's not perfect. It's a work in progress. I think it's a minimal viable experience, and I'm really looking forward to continue to providing information around this. Okay, here's some data. This is coming from Grandview Research AI Agents and Market. They are calling it a $3.86 billion market in 2023 with a 45% cumulative aggregate growth from 24 through 30. I suspect what they're calling an agent here is a pretty wide definition. I really have a hard time believing it's a $4 billion market already and how they're measuring that. But you know, any way you do measure it, it is going to be big. It's going to be interesting, but I'm going to give everybody the secret here where I think you have to be pragmatic about this. And that is, your agent is only as good as the data that it's living on top of. And quite frankly, I have not seen a good response from the technology vendors around this yet, right? If you're going to use your data to predict supply chains or to do succession planning or literally to do anything. And you're going to make it personalized to your organization. Somewhere in here, there needs to be a meter that tells you your data is good enough. You know, it can actually act as a responsible agent and help you do this. And I have not seen this baked into the tool yet. And so I don't think you're going to see hallucinations because there's enough technology out there to help you with that. But I do think you're going to see some questionable results in terms of accuracy or in terms of value until we start really impacting the data quality that sits underneath it. Joanne, user experience, agents, data, where do you want to take our conversation next?
Governance, stewardship, good data, garbage in, garbage out, kind of that track. One of the key issues that corporations are finding, and I'm getting a lot of questions about this, is it's not so much where is the source of the data, but where is the provenance and the lineage of that data. So a lot of people are under the impression that if it's corporate data, it's owned by the corporation. And in fact, it's not. Not everything is proprietary to the company that you work for. You get information from your suppliers. You get information from your trading partners. You get information in a manual for a new printer. You know, whatever it is, the data is not necessarily owned by the company that is trying to use it in its AI, whether it's a small language model built on a large language model, or alternatively, if it's an agent, what you're using to train with. One of the key issues that's going to keep coming up over and over and over again in the next 2 years, as companies go down the road of building AI agents or using AI, is data ownership. There's quality to that data, there's quantity of that data, but there's also where did it come from and how did it change and get transformed from the time we received it to where it is now in the particular system we're accessing it from. And there's a lot of differentiation between the data stream that comes in versus what you're currently using. And going back and tracing that is going to be a very difficult effort. I know a lot of companies that are starting to work on that issue in that space, but you really must be very careful because what you originally got versus what you're currently using could be night and day different. And the ownership of that data, you will not be happy campers if one day you get a cease and desist letter from a trading partner because you're using data that you don't have the right to use. And it's not just about the legalities of it. It's about how it's being used and in what context.
Joanne, we've talked about data provenance and lineage here for a long time. It's those areas of data governance that, quite frankly, only the more advanced groups really get to and know how to use and know, truly understand its importance. But Joe, I'm wondering if you have an opinion on this. I was at a conference yesterday. This was a Cloudera's conference, mostly Fortune 2000 companies at this conference. And AI is pulling them back into their data centers and pulling them back to having a lot more control around their data, particularly in terms of how the models are using AI or how the AI models are using that data. And I'm just wondering, you know, your thoughts around that. Do you see that becoming a bigger concern and more companies bring their data in-house? Or do you think this is, you know, life for the large, rich, and famous, or how I should put this, Joe, for the largest of companies that can afford doing this?
Well, there are a couple of trends. And I was also at a conference earlier this week where this topic was actually discussed. And the cost of processing your data in AI engines in the cloud and where your data is not proximate to those AI engines becomes very expensive. There are runaway budgets right now with AI experimentation and, frankly, not a lot of ROI. So people are concerned And I think this will drive those who can afford to ramp up their own data centers. There's lots of really good equipment coming out of AMD and NVIDIA and Intel and others, where you can build out your own racks, assuming you can find an energy source. This is another big problem, is the power consumption is off the charts. But there is a movement to bring your data and your AI processing back in-house because of the economics of it. I also want to just jump back, if I can, to something Joanne said about quantitative and qualitative data. Quantitative data is much easier to work with, right? It's much more deterministic. Either the part specifications match and it's a substitution, or this model of a toaster will satisfy the customer when the other model that they asked for isn't available. Those quantitative versus qualitative decisions, AI has a little more trouble with those. And I think we've got a ways to go yet before it'll truly understand, you know, customer preferences and subtle differences and nuances among items.
Lot to unpack there, Joe. I want to give everybody a chance to keep chiming in here. But we're down. I really want to dive into this part of the question and give everybody a chance to contribute to it. I'm being very forth. I think it's still very early. I still think there's a lot of questions around data. I think there's going to be questions around adoption. And, you know, I think we're going to have to find some value other than just making people more productive as we go down this path of using AI, whether it's for large language models or for workflow improvements or for agents that are assisting us. We're going to have to continue to find value around this. But, you know, you could take your crystal ball, whether it's 2, 5, or 10 years. We won't talk about years just yet. But, you know, I'm just interested. What do you see as the future of work here? As, you know, we're seeing early semblances of where agents can really be that right-hand person. I think that's a good analogy, Liz. And I'll let you comment here first. What does this look like? You know, what are we, you know, what are people doing differently? What, you know, what are your thoughts about what work's going to be like?
Well, you actually are using it as literally an extension of yourself, right? But I kind of wanted to circle back to the data governance question. I know you're asking a different question, Isaac, but the data governance question is a very, very real question. You need to make sure that you actually own the data that you're learning on, or you can have some traceability, or as an alternative, if you can prove that you're anonymizing the data prior to learning from it, that is actually a way out of that problem. But you have to have that traceability and auditability. So just throwing that out there. Anyway, and if to quote somebody again from this conference, which was amazing, it's not about here's a bunch of tools, let's figure out how we can use them. It's about what are the business problems you're trying to solve and what's the right way to solve them. If you take your eye off the ball and start farting around with AI tools, right? You know, it's like, ooh, I think AI is really big. I mean, listen, we all did it during .com and we all saw what happened then, right? Who lost money in the .com bubble? Everybody raise their hand. Do not lie, right? It was like, ooh, .com, right? So now it's, ooh, AI. Listen, it's great. But if you're not focused on ROI, if you're not clear about what it is you're actually trying to do from a business perspective, then you have completely taken your eye off the ball.
Thank you, Liz. John, how do you see the future of work? You can go real or you can go real futuristic. But I do think things are going to change rapidly with agents.
Well, just looking at call centers, it's like there's probably close to $200 to $300 billion spent on call centers in around the world, really. So that's like a big addressable market. And so like there's a portion of that that can be done by virtual agents. And so I see these things like being integrated all over the place. I think call centers, places you're logging support, those are maybe some of the first candidates for this. And the funny thing is that you had all these people that didn't want to talk to a person in a different country, because maybe their language was maybe not quite a native language, not used to the native dialect that they're used to. Well, in a few years, people are going to just wish they could talk to a human.
Or they're speaking to somebody that sounds like a human, but it's really an AI behind them. You know, John, I don't know if you've seen these yet, but, you know, the way I think this starts even getting more interesting is the partnerships some of the early players are having. So, you know, being able to interface with an agent that a provider has through Microsoft Teams. That's very interesting. But I'm also seeing some evidence of agent-to-agent communications. You know, so an agent inside Workday asking a question from an agent inside Salesforce. These are real use cases that were demoed at their conferences. And you're seeing, you know, what Liz said, a little bit of this sort of technology to drive the hype, you know, illustrating those capabilities. But, you know, you could see a world where you have agents doing small things like Liz suggested, but also starting to show maybe some interoperability. Although I'd be surprised if we start seeing standards emerge too quickly around it. Hi, Ritesh, I'll give you a word around this, your view of the future with agents.
Thank you, Zach, for bringing me back again. I would like to highlight the importance of data, the one that you were mentioning. So going back to one of the vendors where SAP has launched Joule as its AI agent, SAP also has a product, maybe it has been in the market since 15 years now, called Master Data Governance. So one of the best practices that I see coming from this product company or product vendor is that they are pushing MDG before they are pushing Joule. So that's one thing I would like to bring to the table, that they do understand that, yes, backbone, that data is the backbone, or good quality of data is the backbone to any generative AI assistant. I would like to repeat that thing wherein someone mentioned that AI is going to be the right hand for most of the tasks. So I see there has been a lot of automation of some of the routine tasks for each and every product that is getting rolled out. There's much more enhanced decision-making support that is coming out because of AI. We have a lot of conversational interfaces that were not possible. Like, these are complex reports, and most of them relied on primitive workflows. However, now we see that they are getting better and better as we use them more. The quality is increasing. So we have better query data, better generative reports, and through simple dialogues, we can actually get most of these works done. So this is what I am seeing with some of the large ERP solutions like that of SAP, along with collaboration and workflow integration, for which we used to write maybe 100,000 line of codes. So yeah, that's what I see from these models.
Thank you, Ritesh. I want to bring Heather in. Heather and I had dinner last night. She called it the dinner with digital trailblazers. It'd been a while since we met. We live relatively close to each other. And Heather, it was great to see you. Thank you for making the post on LinkedIn. She posted a nice photo of us at dinner last night. And so, Heather, agents, we talked a little bit about it last night. I'm just wondering what you want to share with the group.
Thank you, Isaac. It was great to see you last night as well. I think one of the definite possibilities with AI is in recruiting, and the repetitive efforts that are made to try to find, source, and collect a cadre of candidates, you know, ideally on target candidates that you meet your requirements. The one concern that I have is about data privacy, of course, you know, what kind of information is being collected and making sure that it is being protected. is critical. But one of the, in the literature, what really bothered me is they talked about AI recruiter versus human recruitment. Because in the end of the day, recruiting is a people business, and you cannot ignore the human touch. And the, in the literature, they're saying it's absolutely true. The repetitive efforts in collecting the information is where there are benefits, but the human element of being able to develop those relationships, make sure that you're having a positive employee experience because that has long-term implications for the happiness of your new hire. But it definitely is in a slow-changing industry. There's not been much efforts to change recruiting. AI is making a difference. But at least what the industry is saying is that they're recognizing in this particular case, humans will absolutely continue to be there.
Heather, I think you just teed up our future conversation around AI in recruiting or AI in HR. I literally had this conversation yesterday at the conference with the head of talent acquisition, and you know, there's I think there's some real promising areas with agents, particularly helping the recruiter agent. I think we even with the hiring manager. In terms of being able to go through a more diverse and equitable process in reviewing candidates. And I have some ideas around that. But I think at the end of the day, you know, that piece of paper or that LinkedIn profile is less than 10% of what interests me when I meet somebody. It's that dialogue, you know, it's, and I think it's different for every person. It's how I think that person is going to fit into the group. It's how that person sees themselves and their interests. And, you know, I don't know, Joanne, I think AI is a long way from being able to have that level of perception. What do you say, Joanne?
I think the issue is around the word nuance. And it's starting to get to a point where there are certain capabilities within the tools that are used to build the agents that are starting to take that into consideration. That, you know, when we look at ChatGPT or any of the other large language models and it comes back with a hallucination, so to speak, if you really look at what the answer it's giving you is, it's because the context is wrong. And it's not a hallucination necessarily in terms of a falsehood. It's just misinterpreted what the question you've asked is based on the context that it learned. So to Heather's point, no, I don't think there's ever going to be a situation where humans will be out of the loop in the search process or in the hiring process. I think two things are going to change dramatically though. One is that we're going to look at what those processes actually are in every domain, not just in HR or in recruiting, but they emerged out of paper years and years and years and years ago. And in many cases, they have never changed. They've adopted new technologies and we have new capabilities around them, but the process itself has not changed. I think AI, whether it's from what we discern and learn from our large language model learning or AI agents that we build on our own, those are showing us the error of our ways of not adapting our processes to be more relevant, be more contextualized, and be more semantic to what we're trying to do. And I think that's a lot of what, you know, companies are struggling with as well. And the other quick point that I wanted to make was that as you're talking about agents talking to agents, welcome to the new world of API, which is now agent-based. You no longer have to sit and write those codes. There are agents that are being trained to do all of that as part and parcel of, you know, what you're presenting a user with, which is you can have 20 or 30 different API calls being made, but they're all being an agent talking to an agent. Here, let me get this data from you. To Joe's point about queries, That's exactly where they're coming in. And I would say that's a very big part of that market size that you recounted about agents.
It's coming down to pick up my bag, so I'm not sure where it is. Thank you.
Sorry, folks. We had the pleasure of having Liz here, but we knew she was at the airport. She clearly hit a button there. Joe, I want to give you a tough question to close this out. And my tough question is, you know, agents are going to show up in all these platforms. Chances are, as a CIO or a leader, they are in your platform. People are starting to use it. Some of these are just being bundled in to the existing business models. And, you know, you're a few feet removed from an HR process or a supply chain process or what's happening in the manufacturing floor. But the board comes to you and say, what is the value we're getting out of these agents that I hear are plugged into the platforms that we have? How are you going to go figure that out? Like, you know, I imagine this is not just happening to CIOs. I think it's happening to line managers, you know, where, you know, they're starting, some people are experimenting with these tools and you're trying to say, is this doing anything valuable for us? What are you going to look for there, Joe?
In terms of people in administrative tasks or technology tasks like programming or design work, it's productivity. How you measure the productivity of your staff is important, and that's where you're going to see signs of improvement if they are leveraging the tools well and if the tools are as useful as you hope they are. To Joanne's point about, you know, the IoT equipment on the manufacturing floor and the ability to employ agents or robots to collect and act upon data, well, you're going to have improvements in the productivity of the line, fewer defects, fewer complaints, fewer shortages, more timely supply chain. I mean, a lot of metrics that you can gather if these artificial intelligence tools or machine learning technologies are being as effective as you hope. So that's not that hard a question. I think it's easy to gather the proof that it's working.
I'm going to give everybody two questions that I would ask. Question number one is, get used to asking people, how is this helping you? What parts of your job, what is it doing? And then ask the question, how do you know if it's accurate? And where has it made mistakes, right? And those are going to give you two clues about who's using it, for what purpose, their language about where it's providing value. And it'll be very interesting to hear where it's creating mistakes and making that connection back to whether it's a data issue on your end. Joanne, we've got a minute left. Any last thoughts for today for everybody?
Yeah. Take the journey of learning. Not that we're not all constantly learning, but take the idea of learning what goes into developing your AI from the perspective of the business problem that you want to solve, not from the technology perspective at all, and then retrofit the technology stack around it. I think you'll be very surprised at, in some cases, how little you need, and in other cases, how much more you need to be able to do this. So business case first, technology second, but purposefulness is really the way to get the ROI out of these agents.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Joanne, Joe, John, Liz, Heather, Rob, and Ritesh for joining us on stage today for our discussion on the future of work with AI agents. I do have an article. I'm working on this over this next week for InfoWorld. So if you have something you want to share around AI agents that you could not speak up today around, please do reach out to me. Trying to make it as smart of an article as I can. Folks, our discussion next week, October 18th, will be about accelerating transformation, pivoting with financial uncertainties. I think this is going to be a really important conversation about how we set our priorities around transformation going into 2025. And then October 25th, Agile Innovation, Evolving Agile DevOps and the SDLC with GenAI. I'm going to try to do one of these, you know, about one every 4 to 6 weeks and take an area like here it is around the dev process. We talked about the HR process. We'll do one with Heather around recruiting around this. We might even talk about, you know, just the back office financial ones, about how Gen AI is really going to evolve those. So just a different set of topics about how the future of work is changing and drilling down into particular areas. So that will be the 25th around Agile Innovation. Folks, everybody have a good weekend. Happy Thanksgiving for those in Canada. Easy fast and happy New Year for our for anybody celebrating Yom Kippur this weekend. Happy fall and Columbus Day. I think it's Indigenous People's Day as well this weekend over here in the United States. Lots of things going on. Have a good weekend. For those of you in the southeast of the United States, I hope you are safe from all the weather that we've been experiencing. And I hope to see you all here next week. As a reminder, if you have not been to my new redesigned blog, go visit it at drive.startcio.com. Thank you for all the well wishes around that. And I'll see all of you here next week. Have a good weekend, everyone.